Radio Prague News.
The opposition should oversee the Lower House's Security Services Committee, say several parties. A second party will join the Communists in backing an Anno minority government, says the President. And the President's office is to take legal action over allegations about Milos Zeman's health. All parties of the Lower House should be represented on important committees and commissions, while the opposition ought to head the committee overseeing the security services, a number of groupings agreed on Wednesday. Representatives of the Civic Democrats, Top 09, the Mayors and Independents and the Czech Pirate Party said they had reached accord on those demands following a meeting convened by Pirates leader Ivan Bartos. However, Jaroslav Faltinek of Election Winners Anno said the division of places on Chamber of Deputies committees was based on the rules of the Lower House. Meanwhile, other post-election talks continued on Wednesday. The Czech news agency reported that Anno want to appoint Tomáš Hüner as Minister of Industry and Trade in a minority government being assembled by party leader Andrej Babiš. President Miloš Zeman says Election Winners Anno could form a government with the help of two other parties, the website Deník.cz reported on Wednesday. Speaking on a visit to the Liberec region, the head of state said he believed Andrej Babiš's party would not need to make three attempts to win approval in the lower house, as a second grouping would join the communists in allowing the formation of a minority government. However, Mr. Zeman did not name the second party. The communists have issued a number of demands to Anno in exchange for tolerating their planned minority cabinet, including a law on referendums. The Office of the President says it's planning to take legal action against a Brno local politician who claimed that President Miloš Zeman was suffering from cancer and only had months left to live. Svatopluk Barkik of the group Žít Brno made the claim on social media. However, Mr. Zeman's spokesman described the allegation as a disgusting lie and referred to Mr. Barkik as human garbage. He said the Office of the President would file a complaint and criminal charges against the Brno politician. On Wednesday, the President's doctor, Miloslav Kalash, described the claim as completely fabricated and baseless. Mr. Zeman, who has been head of state since 2013, this week registered to run for a second term in office. The number of visitors who stayed in Czech hotels and other forms of accommodation increased by 5.9% year-on-year in the third quarter of 2017 to reach 7 million. There was an increase in the number of both international and domestic tourists, according to figures released on Wednesday by the Czech Statistics Office. The Czech Republic's footballers will take part in the China Cup next year. It was announced on Wednesday. They'll face the hosts, Wales and Uruguay, in the four-team international competition, which will be held in the last week of March in the city of Nanning. The Czechs missed out on qualification for next year's World Cup in Russia and may use the China Cup as preparation for their qualifying campaign for Euro 2020, which will begin in September. The weather forecast, it should be overcast with temperatures of up to 8 degrees Celsius in the Czech Republic on Thursday. The following days are likely to see rain, while snow is due in some parts of the country at the beginning of next week. My name is Ian Willoughby, and that is the end of the news.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Danielle Lazarová. Coming up in today's programme, the future of jobs, robotics and artificial intelligence were the key focus of a one-day conference here in Prague today. And later on, an in-depth interview with Barbara Kodenhof-Kalergi, a member of the German-speaking minority in Czechoslovakia, whose family was forced to flee the country at the end of the Second World War. Today, a journalist and author living in Vienna, she shares her memories and talks about her ties to her old homeland. All that coming up, so please stay with us. This Wednesday saw a conference in Prague called iRobot, bringing together researchers in both the public and private spheres to debate advances in robotics and artificial intelligence. One of the participants was Olga Afanasieva of the Prague-based startup Good AI, which has been profiled by publications like The Economist, Forbes, as well as Radio Prague. Much of the discussion focused on the future coming up fast. Jan Fellinger asked about the discussion first.
Well, it was quite diverse because we were mostly taking questions from the audience and also kind of reflected some of the concerns that people usually have when they discuss future of AI and robotics, and a lot of questions were concerning future of jobs and the transformation of society with new technologies. There were some questions on education, what should people focus on, what kind of skill set shall they develop in order to succeed in this very fast-changing environment. And there were a lot of representatives from businesses who are also curious about how AI can help them. So, yeah.
Your focus has been on making advances in AGI, in artificial general intelligence. How does that fit in within the scope of, say, advances in AI at the moment?
It's difficult to say where we are at the moment. Sometimes you feel like you're still at the beginning. At the same time, some quite promising strides have been made, pushing the field forward. So that's what we and a few groups around the world are trying to do, push the limits of current state of the art and find new methods that can overcome more than a few limits that current state of the art technology has. And we also have a recently founded sister company, which is focusing on business applications. So there we can see kind of like a more immediate impact on business projects in various fields, Industry 4.0, anomaly detection, insurance, natural language processing, and things like that. Yeah, so many various problems.
We witnessed recently that the humanoid robot Sophia was granted citizenship in Saudi Arabia. However, the software isn't there yet, is it? We're not nearing anything like artificial general intelligence at the moment, are we?
Yeah, as I was saying, it's difficult to estimate when humanity will achieve it. That's probably more like a PR gesture or symbolic gesture, like giving this citizenship to a robot. But there are some promising, let's say, trends where we can see that we're getting a little bit further. So now one of the trends is that current state-of-the-art methods and deep learning and machine learning is being used to develop better deep learning, machine learning techniques. Yeah, so there's some kind of meta-learning trend in AI research in general. And this is also one of the paths towards general AI, that you will be using AI itself to improve itself and use AI to search for better algorithms, for improvements and so on, so and self-improvements. So, yeah, I think there are some good trends. While now we are creating various specialized AIs for various domains, the outlook for the future is that general AI would be a way how we can augment our own human intelligence and move to the next level.
Olga Afanasieva of the Prague-based startup Good AI speaking there to Jan Fellinger. A reminder that you're with Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, where it's now time for our main feature, an in-depth interview today. Barbara Codenhove Karlergi was born in Prague in 1932. As a member of the German-speaking minority in Czechoslovakia, she and her family were forced to flee the country at the end of the Second World War. She later settled in Vienna, where she became a journalist and author, ever with an eye on events happening in her old homeland. Dominic Yoon visited Barbara at her home in Vienna to discuss her life and work.
When I was a child, there was a large German-speaking minority. There were 3 million German-speaking people. Usually, they were the people in the west of the Czech lands. But there was also a minority within a minority, which was the old Austrian aristocracy, which were not German nationalists. My father used to say, I am neither a Czech nor a German. He used to say, I'm part of, like, the dinosaur, a species of people that do not exist anymore, whose patriotism was bound to the land, not to the language. So in his time, and we all still live in that sort of tradition, it was not important whether you spoke German or Czech. My father called himself ein Böhme deutsche Zunge, a German-speaking Czech. Later on, you were either German-speaking or Czech. You were either a German or a Czech nationalist. This was just part of history. And of course, the German-speaking minority does not exist anymore. I think some young Czechs are interested in the people who used to live with them in places like Brno or in places like the Böhmerwald, like the Šumava. So this is now part of history. I'm old enough to have experienced it as a child.
Okay, we'll get back to that question a little later on, but I would like to first ask you about the Kodenhof-Kalergi family, who have a hyphenated name. So that stems from two noble families who got together in the 19th century, is that correct?
Well, the Kalergis came from Greece and the Kodenhofs came from the Netherlands, and my mother's original name was Palfi. They were Hungarians living in Slovakia, so this was a mixture. And in our family, there was always an element of multiculturalism. My grandmother was Japanese, so nationalism was something that was quite foreign to traditions in our family.
So your parents would have still remembered the Austro-Hungarian Empire, right? And that sort of pan-national body, which today people regard as like something like the European Union, right? It's like a family of nations, right?
For my father, that certainly was his world, his environment. And for him, the demise of the multicultural Austro-Hungarian Empire was much more difficult and painful experience than in 1945, when we had to leave the Czech lands and were practically beggars. That did not matter to him as much as sort of the loss of his real homeland, which was this multicultural empire.
So you have memories as a child of being forced to leave Czechoslovakia after the end of the Second World War.
Yes, my parents used to say, well, we were here before Hitler and we will be here after Hitler, which was a tragic mistake. Many Nazi people who came with the German occupation, came to the Czech lands, left in time. People like us did not, because we thought, well, we've lived here before, we're going to live here after the demise of the Nazi Reich. But of course, this was not so. One day, I remember it perfectly, it was the 5th of May, 1945. Suddenly, some people from the Národní výbor came to our house and said we had to leave the place immediately, and we were interned in a Vozovna, in a place where they kept the tramways. We stayed there for 3 days, and the mob tried to burn it down, but fortunately it was strongly built, so nothing happened. And 3 days later, on the 8th of May, the Prague Rising happened, and the German soldiers left Prague, left the city, and we were allowed to go with them. I remember the picture, the image, that was an endless, an immense procession of people without, we didn't have any luggage, marched on foot through the Plzeňská to the west. We were on the march for 2 days until we reached the American army. When the war drew to a close, everybody hoped that would be the Americans who entered Prague, but they, as everybody knows, came to a halt. It was in Rokycan at that time, and the Red Army entered Prague first, and at that time we already left. We asked, well, what will happen to the people who will not leave the place? And then the Czech officer who entered this place where we are imprisoned said, well, you will be under Czech jurisdiction. So then my parents thought, well, perhaps better to leave, which was a wise decision, because in the following days there was a sort of pogrom with many, many people lost their lives. Until in 1948, the sort of regular deportation of German citizens began. We were part of the sort of wild, unofficial exodus of Germans, so-called Germans, from Prague.
During the war, was it difficult being German and living among Czechs? Did you feel that they were not making eye contact? Did you feel that they suddenly hated you? Was there a way to distinguish yourself as being either pro or anti-Nazi in some way?
Well, of course, it was the Czechs who suffered. And of course, it was not without reason that this eruption of anger and revenge happened in 1945. They were unlawfully suppressed by the German occupation army. I have a Czech friend who's my age, and I returned to Prague in the 80s as a journalist. And we often compared memories. And very often we looked at each other and said we could have lived on a different planet. So we lived in the same city. It was two different worlds. I went to a German school, and I remember once in school, some Nazi functionary came to us and said, "German children, you must always remember that you are in enemy country here." And I was shocked at that, and I came home and told that to my mother, and she said, "Well, this is nonsense. You're not in an enemy country. This is your home. You live here."
Did your parents consider themselves Czechs as well?
Or no.
You did. You considered yourself...
No, we're not Czech.
You're just born in Czech.
Our language was German, but the word Böhmen, Bohemia, doesn't exist in the Czech language. And it means the territory of what is now the Czech Republic, what in the monarchy was das Kronland Böhmen. It had nothing to do with language, it was just a province. So in these very old days, language didn't matter very much. You felt a relationship or a love to that country, no matter whether you spoke German or Czech. But then, of course, it became all important whether you were Czech or German. And then, of course, my father was served in the First World War in the Austrian army. So Austria was more of a home to us. That's why we went to Austria in 1945, not to Germany. This was a sort of setting that has completely disappeared and already was in the process of disappearing at the time of the Nazi occupation, when the great divide was Czech or German, or Jew, of course, which was another distinction.
And a few years later, you presumably would have felt the irony that you would have had to have left Czechoslovakia anyway, because as a member of the nobility, the communists would have had little tolerance for you anyway, so it wouldn't have mattered if you were German or Czech, right?
Yeah, well, for instance, the Schwarzenbergs considered they were Czech patriots, which my father's family was not. So when the Germans entered the Czech lands in 1939, even among the aristocracy, there was a divide. Are you Czech or are you German? And if you were German-speaking, you were automatically a citizen of the Reich, of the Deutsches Reich, unless you expressly opted for Czech nationality, which some families like the Schwarzenbergs did, which we did not. That divided even families. So I remember a relation of ours said to his son, "Another German word and I'll hit you." And the boy was very astonished because his father told him that he was not to speak any German anymore. So, I mean, suddenly this national divide entered even families or good friends were suddenly on different sides.
You mentioned the Schwarzenbergs. You've been a friend of Karol Schwarzenberg, a fellow member of the pan-European nobility, also with close ties to today's Czech Republic. During what then followed, during the Cold War, you both kept certain ties alive with Czechoslovakia. So can you describe this period?
Well, I became a journalist later on, and of course Prague was always home to me, and as soon as I could, I returned there, especially as my mother came from southern Bohemia, Breznice, and I spent quite a lot of my childhood there. This is a Czech-speaking area. We played with the Czech children, and this was a sort of home to me. So as soon as I could, I returned to travel to...
Which year?
Oh, well, that was the 70s.
The communist times.
During the communist times. And when I was a television reporter, we did quite a lot of stories.
So you worked as a correspondent for Austrian media...
Austrian television, radio, we couldn't have correspondents in Czechoslovakia. But I traveled there with a visum. And after 1968, of course, 68 was the Prague Spring, was a great experience. I went there often and had many friends there. And when the Warsaw Pact troops entered Czechoslovakia, I wanted to return. And I was banned. I didn't get a visa for many years. And in the late 80s, suddenly I got a visa again. And we made a film, and a sort of feature film, which the authorities didn't like. There was also an interview with Václav Havel in it. And so then I was banned again. But after 89, the Austrian television radio immediately opened a bureau there and sent me there. So from 1990 onwards, I was a sort of official correspondent in Prague. And I remember thinking, well, shall I return there? It was quite difficult to open a bureau. And in the time of transition, everything was quite difficult to get localities. And I thought, well, yes, but I want to go back. I want to see this is, after all, it's my home. I remember thinking, well, perhaps I'll get an apartment in Prague and sort of change, live part of the time in Prague, part of the time in Vienna. And then I remember it was before Czechoslovakia entered the European Union. There was a party in Prague. There were politicians and journalists and all sorts of people. And they said, when we enter the European Union, everybody will be able to come and settle here. And I remember thinking, well, I'm not anyone. I was born here. This is my city. I want to return. I'm not somebody from England or France or Germany. And then I sort of realized, well, you cannot put the wheels of history back. You cannot start where you once left. You cannot go back to the past. I'm here on a job and I can come as a visitor, but it is not possible to really return what Karel Schwarzenberg did, many people did. I thought, I can't really return and live there. It's impossible.
Tell me about your friendship with Karel Schwarzenberg.
I used to know him as a young man in Vienna, and he was then called to head this Helsinki committee, and I liked what he did, looking after dissidents. And then I saw him occasionally in Prague when I was correspondent there. I remember there was an occasion when Václav Havel introduced the guard on the Hradčany. They had uniforms which were designed by some Czech Hollywood designer, very colorful blue and white and red uniforms. And then Karel Schwarzenberg came over and said, do you find anything familiar in those uniforms? Oh, not that I know of. I said, look at their belts. And the belts were in the Schwarzenberg colors, blue and white squares, which were part of the old Schwarzenberg guard in Krumlov, and there was some old merchant in Vienna who manufactured these belts for the Krumlov guard, and so they took these for the president's guard. To this day, I think, go about with these Schwarzenberg belts on their uniform. So he quite enjoyed this.
And in 2001, you were awarded the Order of Tomáš Garrigue Masaryk by President Havel for services to the Czech Republic, to the Czech people. So tell me about this.
Yeah, well, of course, it was a big honor, and I was very happy to receive this and to have put it on me. I thought then, and also said it, that it was a bit of a tribute to the people who were thrown out of Czechoslovakia, but still kept their friendship and their ties to this old country. And I thought this was a tribute also to, well, many innocent people who were either killed or deported. This is something that Václav Havel was, as far as I know, the sole person who apologized for this. Nobody else apologized, but he did. And I thought this award was a bit of not an apology, but a gesture towards those who were then, I think, unlawfully deported or thrown out of the country.
And you've also spent some of your career as a writer pondering certain Czech issues. You've looked into the Beneš decrees, you've looked into the Czech aristocracy. So you continue to be, an outside observer now of the Czech people?
Well, of course, I read the papers and observe what is happening. I still have some friends there, like Jiřina Šiklová, for instance. But my main interest, of course, is now centered on other issues. I'm working with refugees. I'm also a refugee. I used to be a child of refugees. So I have a special interest in that issue. And this is now my main interest, working with refugees who come here from Syria or Afghanistan or whatever.
And you also continue to write articles for Austrian...
I write a column for a daily newspaper, the Standard, yeah.
Having lived now most of your life in Austria, but yet also having Czech roots, so how do you compare Austrians and Czechs, if that's possible?
I think they are very similar. They're also especially Viennese. If you look at film pictures of Viennese and Prague street scenes, you can see it's the same sort of people. They also have a similar character. They have a sense of humor. They also have some less engaging qualities which they share. But of course, in the beginning of the 20th century, you had a large migration of Czechs to Austria, especially Vienna. If you look at the Vienna telephone book, you will find many, many Czech names.
Novák is everywhere, right?
Nováks are everywhere. So at one point, Vienna was the biggest Czech city next to Prague. So many, many people, especially in Vienna, have Czech roots, which they have largely forgotten. We once made a film about Vienna as a melting pot where many nationalities converged. And it was easy to find people of Polish or Hungarian descent, of Italian descent, and of course there were many people who said, ah, my grandmother spoke Czech, but I don't speak a word. So Czechs have, I think, assimilated very quickly and have not, different from other nations, not remembered their roots very well. It was a little different with the people who came after 1968. They had more pride in their origins than the people who came as mainly as servants and workers in the beginning of the 19th century.
Barbara Codenhove-Callegri, thank you very much for joining me.
With Dominic Yoon with that in-depth interview, and I'm afraid it's brought us to the end of today's programme here at Radio Prague. You'll find us online at radio.cz. If you'd like to contact us, please send a mail to english@radio.cz. And of course, you can also follow Radio Prague on Facebook and Twitter. This is Daniela Lazarová saying thanks for joining us today and take care.